Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, Rob Greaves here once again, bringing you Listen to Older Voices and the third and final part of the remarkable story of Angela Rose. Angela, born in 1938, was fortunate enough to be brought up in a family with a love and value for education. She was able to attend a private girls' school where the nuns nurtured her love for learning and helped spark her love for God. Entering the order as a teacher, she continued her journey of spirituality, of learning, and life. There are many remarkable facets to this woman and her life, not the least being her ability to wonderfully balance her religious journey with her secular journey. She married Bill, a racehorse owner, and together they made a wonderful, loving and rewarding life with and away from the world of horse racing. Eventually they retired to Hillsville in Melbourne's Yarra Valley. Life was wonderful and Angela was completely happy. Then two disasters. Bill contracts dementia, and right on top of that, Angela is involved in a near-fatal car accident. Much of part three of her story involves Angela sharing her innermost fears, her pain, her loss of her life with Bill, and in doing it in such a way that we cannot be left with anything but awe. There are many uplifting stories of courage and determination in this world, and this is one such story. We pick up with events leading to that horrific accident. Now, Angela.
Anyway, we went down and had a nice lunch and he was getting very tired. So I said, look, I'll go and get the car, Bill, and bring it round to the disabled car park, which was just beyond the lights in the main street. I was doing that. This enormous crash went into the car. I'll never, ever forget it. And then I was hit a second time and I seemed to go through the air. Now, this is in a big Mercedes E220, which I suppose would be one of the strongest cars you could buy.
You were in the car.
I was driving the car. Thankfully, Bill was not with me because he was waiting for me at the disabled disabled car park. Well, the impact was so great that the locks locked, so they couldn't get me out of the car. But I did have the presence of mind to touch the automatic windows because the car was still going. And with a great lot of trouble, they got me out of the car.
Wow.
And I was screaming, crying.
Of course.
I didn't know what had happened. Oh. Now, what had happened was that a man who was 84 or 5 was driving his car and had a heart attack and had his foot on the accelerator. And he'd been through a red light already, knocked over a pedestrian, knocked another woman getting into her car and then crashed into our car with all the force coming down a hill. So there were ambulances everywhere and two people were flown out by emergency, you know, air ambulances. Actually, I was the last to be taken and Bill went, we went by ordinary ambulance to Maroondah Hospital and when we got there, they lay me on the bed and they asked me to lift my head and I had no power to lift my head. I will never, ever forget that. And I said to myself, I must be very sick. So they looked after Bill there for 2 days and they bound me up with a special ambulance and took me to the Royal Melbourne Hospital. And this wonderful Chinese doctor, he told me, when you break your arm, help you, and you have broken your neck. And he said, tomorrow morning at 7:30, after all the scans I had, which were unbelievable, 5 girls holding me and holding my neck and saying, 1, 2, 3, turn, and I was violently ill. And then the MRI, for those that have had an MRI, they know what I'm talking about. and 7:30 the next morning. But the surgeon told me that I could be a quadriplegic and have no feeling in my hands or feet because the sixth disc in my neck had been displaced. So I had to deal with that all night, that I could be a quadriplegic and be flat on my back for all my life. The only thing that really helped me was years and years ago, I'd made a 30-day retreat and I have continued to practice my breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. And in that time, when you breathe in, you take in God's love. And out, you breathe out anything that can stop. That's God's love in our hearts. And I said, well, the only thing I'll be able to do is to breathe if this happens. So that was in my mind as I was wheeled down to the theatre. And this wonderful Chinese doctor said to me, I will look after you. And so did the anaesthetist. And it turned out to be a six-hour operation. I now have a titanium plate in my six discs and four screws in my neck. I was at the Royal Melbourne for over a week, and the surgeon said, now I'm going to send you to the Victorian Rehabilitation Centre with this big brace on me. And I was there for 9 weeks, and wonderful, wonderful people. In fact, I've written a book, because I would never have thought of writing a book, but I had a wonderful doctor, Dr. Sarah Abrahamson, and she suggested, because she saw me regularly, that I should buy a laptop and write a book about this experience, because she said very few people ever write about a surgery and what it takes to get through all this emotionally, because you go through enormous crying, like you've never heard, or I did. And it was in that time that 3 days after that big operation that I had to make the decision for Bill to be put into long-term care. And that was very difficult.
I mean, you're dealing with what could only be described as the most critical emotional period of your life.
Absolutely.
With your own injuries and your own future, and yet your husband has this need for you to make a critical decision about him as well.
That's right. We had a wonderful care manager from Benitas, and because I was supposed to go to my nephew's wedding in whatever date it was, Bill was booked in to respite. So that took care of that fortnight. And then the care manager came up to Healesville and in the nursing home here, and everyone was so shocked about myself that they asked if he would have priority for the next bed, and he got it. And that's where she said, you'd be very silly to miss this opportunity. So that's why I had to make the decision and sign the papers flat on my back, that's where Bill would have to go. So it was on our 16th wedding anniversary that we were separated forever. And I'm still coming to terms with that. And next Wednesday, it's the first time that I've felt that we talk on the phone. Bill was brought down by a wonderful lady from Melbourne to see me in the hospital. I couldn't get over how old and he'd lost weight. Mm. And also he's very disoriented. Half of Healesville have been to see him. And I say to him, so-and-so came to see you yesterday, Bill. He said, no. He said, I'm in a motel here. And he said, I've just had my lunch, but he said, I don't know anybody. And I said, oh, lots of people have been to see you. And he said, I don't think so. I can't remember. So next Wednesday, I'm going to see Bill, and this lovely lady from Melbourne is coming with me. So it'll be a huge day. I'm so afraid that he'll think that I'm going to bring him home.
Sure.
But I can't.
No, it's one of those situations that nobody on this planet would choose to have as their life, you know, in that moment in time and space. Mm. And you haven't chosen it, but it is something that you're dealing with. And I must say, what you've dealt with so far and what you're dealing with now, most people, I don't think they would be coping. And I'm sure There must be so many people supporting you at this stage.
I've got a couple of very good friends and enormous acquaintances. And this street that we live in would be the most extraordinary street of compassion. People that, and beyond, have bought soup and cookies and have spent time with me and helped me with the washing. Unbelievable.
Sure.
And always saying, you know, we're coming this afternoon. They always ring to see if they could come, say, this afternoon.
When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand and nothing, oh, nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me and soon I will be brighten up even your darkest night. You just call up my name and you know wherever I am I'll come running, oh yeah baby, to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, now all you got to do is call and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got a friend. If the sky above you should turn dark and full of clouds and that old north wind should begin to blow, keep your head together and call my name out loud now. Soon I'll be knocking upon your door. You just call up my name and you know wherever I am I'll come running, oh yes I will see you again. Winter, spring, summer, got to do is call and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, ain't it good to know that you've got a friend? People can be so cold, they'll hurt you and desert you. Well, they'll take your soul if you let. Don't you let them. You just call out my name and you know wherever I am I'll come running to see you again. Oh babe, don't you know about winter, spring, summer, or fall. Now all you've got to do is call. Lord, I'll be there, yes I will. No, you've got a friend. You've got a friend, yeah. Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? Oh yeah, got a friend.
listen to older voices, reliving the spirit of Australia.
So, I've got a diary.
You've been so popular, have you?
And just this afternoon, there's ladies, a couple have coming to help and have afternoon tea or a cup of tea. And the lady said, "And would you like anything?" I said, "Look, I always seem to be running out of milk."
Milk.
I've had an extraordinary life. I haven't finished yet.
Oh, I think there's a number of chapters still to come.
I think so. This is what the doctors and the wonderful people at the Victorian Rehabilitation have said. Bill is on his journey, and you're beginning a new journey.
Yes.
And I do believe that.
Yes.
But it's hard for me to see at the moment.
Oh, because it's all so fresh.
It's only 3 months ago
exactly.
that this
and,
all
and
happened.
And the confused emotions you must be going
yes.
through, you know, the chaotic, you know, up and downs.
That is
consistent.
Right. Yes, and often crying. I sit here sometimes and just cry.
We go back to before you were married and you were two people who had lives and you were on different journeys and your paths touched and then ran together for...
Yes, that's correct. For, say, 17 years.
Yes. And now the paths are diverting.
Are diverting. That is true. And so many of the people that helped me at the Victorian Rehabilitation Centre, and they were numerous. Say, the doctor, the psychologist, the OT, and social worker, they all said, look, Bill is on his journey.
Yes.
And you are on a new journey.
Absolutely right.
And it's been very hard for me to get my head around that. But slowly I'm understanding that I can never understand what's happening in Bill's mind.
No one can.
And nobody can.
That's
I mean,
right.
Nobody can understand dementia.
No.
And so I've just have to be very open to whatever's going to happen. And I just feel it's going to be something good.
Look, I mean, the thing about going on a new journey is that that journey doesn't ask or require you to forget your past.
No.
In fact, it says embrace that and remember it and use it. I mean,
that is
your
right.
love of Bill and all your experiences can never be taken away
no,
from you.
No, that is so true. And it all your experiences go with you, don't they?
That's right.
You know, and you take that with you.
Exactly.
And share even in a bigger way.
That's right.
That is so true. Mm.
So, looking at you, Angela, and given that what you've been through, I have to say, if I had walked in now and didn't know about the walking stick, you've actually come through it very well in terms of how you present yourself. You look as though you're somebody who has got still many years of life left.
Yes,
yet.
I believe that.
I think you do too. Where would you, have you had any thoughts of where you would like to take your life from now? Or is it too soon to have gone down that?
I think it's too soon to go down that track. But one of my greatest loves would be to work with people who are marginalised.
Which is going back to where you were many years ago. Yes.
That is right. To be with them. And I look around here with all this furniture and God knows what, and I think that I'd like to live minimalistically.
I think a lot of us, and I include myself here as an over 60, get to that point where you look around and you go, what is all this about?
I know. Yes. Look, it's all lovely furniture and beautiful, but I'm sure we could live just as well with not all the things about us.
Indeed.
Yes, I wouldn't have ever thought that I would think this way, but it's coming to me.
So, okay, the future is unknown. And in some ways, that's like most adventures. You take that first step, not really knowing where exactly. You've got some idea, but you don't quite know.
No, I've got no idea.
And if, like most of us, the only thing you can be sure of in this life is that as soon as you start thinking, I think this is where I'm going, it'll go somewhere else because it never quite works out the way we think things are going to work out. Life is very strange.
That is right. Yes, and I really believe that I've been given a second chance.
Absolutely.
Because when I remember back to that Maroondah Hospital, not being able to lift my head off the bed.
And possibly being a paraplegic.
Yes. I feel as though God's given me a second chance and to live life to the full.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole
This is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
Now, when I walked in here, you had Mary McKillop on your table here. She was in the car, I understand.
She was, my sister and her husband were asked to come up to wherever the police put their car.
Mm.
Which was a write-off.
Oh, of course.
And to clear the glove box and the boot, which they did. And my sister said to me, "Do you know, we found a little statue of Mary McKillop in the glove box." And I somehow think that she may have saved my life. And she's going to be canonised this year. And my wonderful mother, who... she died in January this year. I just can't believe all this has happened. She was 100 years old. And she died at Mary McKillop Residence in Hawthorne.
Oh, what a connection.
Yes. And she was a remarkable... she really was a remarkable lady. She and for the last 2 weeks of her life, she lived on chocolate and wine.
Good for her. Way to go, Mum. I mean, none of this straight vegetables.
And I was very privileged. I was staying with my cousin and they rang me at 2 o'clock in the morning to say that Mum passed away. And she had a marvellous doctor over many years. And the nuns, the Josephite sisters, were absolutely marvellous, and their staff.
Yes.
And they called me at 2 o'clock and I went there and Mum had just died. And the lady said, "I'm about to put her teeth in. Would you like to help?" And I said I would. So I stayed with Mum all the evening with the carers. And my family asked me to do the eulogy, which I did. And we had... the number of people, there were 120 people at her funeral.
Goodness me. Well, that says something about her life, doesn't it?
It does, you know.
Yes.
Yes. So she had a remarkable life. My darling dad, he died when he was 77. And, of course, he smoked from the time he was nine. So you can imagine what he died of.
It caught up.
But a wonderful man.
I mean, it would be very a sad moment losing mum, but on the other hand, 100 years is quite a lot to celebrate.
And it was, her funeral was a great celebration of a wonderful life.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. So so there we are. I've enjoyed doing this immensely. I started off fumbling a little bit, but...
Well, I think people listening will feel very privileged that you've shared not just your story, but you've shared some of your emotional journey.
Mm.
And I think there will be people out there listening who are going through similar types of journeys, different incidents, but similar journeys. And it's nice to know you're not alone.
Oh, look, that is so important. I feel for the people who are alone. You know, for some reason or another, they've never connected. And I think in our life it's so important just to smile at people while we can. So the people get to know us. We mightn't have to say a lot to them, but we smile.
A smile says a lot.
Yes. And also to belong to different groups. Like our church group's been very important to us as we're Catholics here at the church. Mm. Also, I belong to Probus and U3A and done PowerPoint and so forth with them.
So keeping active.
Keeping active, yes, because it's not that you're trying to get reward for anything or anything else. It's just being involved with people, and that's what we're supposed to do. That is the whole message of Christ. We are the body of Christ.
That's probably a very good place for us to finish. Angela, thank you very much for being on Listen to Older Voices.
Thank you very much, Rob. It's been a pleasure to share with you and to whoever listens.
Thank you, Angela.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.